And welcome to another fun-filled episode of that 401k podcast. It's Ari Rosenbaum here, not without my co-host Dan Venturi. We will call this a very special episode of that 401k podcast. It's the end of the summer. I just came back from family vacation. We usually take a little 4 or 5 day family vacation after summer camp is over for my kids. So I just got back yesterday. So because of the scheduling and Dan and I being very, very busy, we really could get a podcast in together. So that's why we have a very special episode of that 401k podcast. Of course, when we talk about very special episodes, you know, I'd be remiss not to mention Different Strokes that always seem to have very, very special episodes. The very special episode with First Lady Nancy Reagan talking about drugs on one episode. And, of course, the episodes where Arnold and Kimberly got kidnapped. And then a couple years later, Sam, the stepbrother, the redheaded stepbrother, got kidnapped as well in that final season of Different Strokes. So, you know, we always remember the sitcoms from the 70s and 80s that always had those very, very special episodes. So this is a very, very special episode indeed. Talk about, you know, obviously some of the events that are coming up, and then obviously some of the topics that are coming out in the 401k world, especially this summer. Of course, family vacation, I was traveling, went to Pittsburgh, went to PNC Park, saw some sites in Pittsburgh as well, National Aviary and whatnot, then went to Cleveland, went to Progressive Field, went to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and then, of course, Cedar Point, which is, for people who don't know, is one of the most recognized and most famous amusement parks. It's on a peninsula in Sandusky, Ohio. And, of course, they've got about a dozen roller coasters. And, of course, if anybody knows me, they know that I think the kiddie roller coaster is scary enough. So, needless to say, while there are about a dozen roller coasters, I mean, like, real roller coasters, we're not talking about the Woodstock roller coaster at Camp Snoopy. We're talking about real roller coasters. I think I was on two of them. And the second one, I had to close my eyes. Just let's say roller coasters aren't my bag, but you know, had a fun time. And talking about Progressive Field, that was my first time watching them in Cleveland, and we'll be able to do that if you join me at that 401k conference. It's going to be just in about 3 weeks, September 20th, Cleveland, Ohio, Progressive Field. We're going to have a great event with Corey Snyder. Everybody remembers him as an 84 Olympian on the year that baseball was introduced as a demonstration sport. And then, of course, he was a well-known Cleveland Indian and L.A. Dodger, Cleveland Indians in the 80s when, you know, they had some half-decent teams with Joe Carter. And, of course, there'll be a game outing that night against the Philadelphia Phillies. It's a great event. $100. Sign up at that401ksite.com. And after that, the next event is going to be on Friday, October 11th, our first football-themed That 401k Conference, Gillette Stadium, home of the Super Bowl champion New England Patriots. Night before, they're taking on my Giants. Hopefully, I'll be able to go to that game. You know, I say that as I record, the Giants beat the Patriots in a meaningless exhibition game. And, of course, Foxborough, it's a great venue, great stadium, unlike its predecessor, Foxborough Stadium. We'll have a great event, great presenters, very informative plan providers who can help an advisor grow their 401k plan book of business. I think that's extremely important. So for $100, you're going to get a stadium tour, meet and greet with a Patriot great, which is to be announced, lunch, and like I said, it's a fun event, plenty of parking in Foxborough. Hope you can attend, and of course that 401k site for .com for more information. After that, it's going to be Friday, November the 7th, and we are going to be, or is it Friday, November 8th? It's going to be that Friday, and we're going to be at MetLife Stadium, home of the New York Giants, home of the New York Jets, for a Giants-themed event. Again, same drill, lot of presenters, a lot of great information available. Help grow your business, have some lunch, learn a few things, and, you know, meet a well-known giant. And then for the final event of the year, we're going to be at AT&T Stadium. I always want to say Dallas, but it's going to be in Arlington, Texas, Friday, December 13th. Want to go to Dallas. It's been a while for me. It's been, I don't know, 28 years since I've been to Dallas. I think this is the time that I will actually try to visit South Fork. For anybody that knows, Dallas was my favorite TV show of all time, even more so than Seinfeld and Curb Your Enthusiasm. So it's going to be a fun event at AT&T Stadium. Great stadium tour that they're going to have us featured. The venue, it's going to be a very, very interesting venue. I think the field is going to be the backdrop for the presentations. And we're going to have a great time. They're going to take a picture of us. I believe it's part of the stadium tour on the 50-yard line. So Arlington, Texas, don't miss it. And, of course, for 2020, while we are thinking about regional events in St. Louis, San Francisco, Minneapolis is a very, very strong possibility. And even for next fall, which is more than a year away, thinking about, you know, maybe New Orleans, Las Vegas, you know, there are quite a few cities in the mix. We'll do, you know, plenty of conferences, the local kind, the regional kind, that 401k conference. And then, of course, in March 10th and 11th, 2020, Monday and a Tuesday, we're going to try that 401k national conference from Walt Disney World Swan. That's in Lake Buena Vista, Florida. And, of course, Disney World, spend that a couple days, go tour the parks, go see the Star Wars land, Galaxy's Edge. I think it just had opened right now at Disney World. I know that several people got the sneak peek. I think it's now officially open. And, of course, obviously the Magic Kingdom, Epcot, Animal Kingdom, all that. And then for 2 days, spend time with us. We're going to have, again, great presenters. We're going to have some celebrity guests. Really something unique in the national conference. I feel like a lot of the other conferences are, you know, they're very nice, nice venues and whatnot, but it's always the same speakers. It's always the same kind of agenda, and we're going to try something very, very unique and something very, very memorable. I mean, that was the whole idea of starting the regional events in the beginning. I've seen too many times where, you know, you would have a local DCIO guy or gal invite advisors to a local hotel, you know, bring in some other plan providers, educate them, but you wouldn't remember what you learned or what you ate. And so we wanted, you know, to do something different, and that's what started that 401k conference. And we always believed that we'd get to a national stage. And so 2020, we will try that. If it works, we'll do it again. So, of course, all information of all the conferences are on that 401ksite.com. As far as what's going on in the industry, you know, summer is kind of a, you know, it's 5500 season, but in terms of news and in changes, not a lot of things going on. You know, number one, one thing about you have to know about my writings and have to know about my practice, I really don't care about pending legislation. I don't believe, I guess it maybe comes to the fact that, you know, as a student or fan of was it the School of Rock? What was that thing on ABC? You know, where they did these cartoons, you know, when the bill became a law and all that kind of stuff. And I've really never been too concerned about legislation because I don't really care about legislation until it's passed by both, you know, houses of Congress and signed by the president. So while the Secure Act, a lot of plan providers, you know, spent a lot of time analyzing it and this and that, it's still languished in the Senate. It's still there. It's still sitting there. You know, obviously in politics, you know, you can pass a bill in one house and then it dies in the other house. And then, you know, there may be some legislation and another senator attaches something that the one side doesn't like. And so it's all a game of politics. And so the Secure Act still languishes. We really don't have any true open MEP legislation or regulation. again, what the Department of Labor had put out with their final rule doesn't really open up open MEPs. You still really have a requirement of a nexus, commonality between participating employers in order to achieve the status of having one plan, one 5500, one audit. So we'll see what happens with that. You know, hopefully Senate will get behind it and, you know, pass it or have some type of meaningful open MEP legislation going on and being signed into law. Because, you know, quite honestly, you know, I think the Department of Labor, especially under the last years of the Obama administration, were a little out of whack in the sense that they did nothing to change their course or add anything to amplify that advisory opinion in 2012, the TAG advisory opinion, as it's been known, because it was dealing with the TAG plan, the TAG Advantage plan. And the Department of Labor really, you know, as far as I'm concerned, didn't, you know, do anything to expand on their thinking and their rationale. So for us who are proponents of open MEPs, we've been just counting time. And Department of Labor, for some reason or another, allowed states to offer, you know, IRA programs and, you know, other types of savings vehicles that were never going to gain popularity. And I will still always say that any of these state IRA choices for small businesses will never achieve critical mass because of one reason only. Employers and employees don't want government dealing with retirement savings. Why? I got two words for you. Social Security. We see what's going on with the Social Security system and, you know, money running out and, you know, no trust fund, that it's really just sitting as an IOU to the by the federal government. So, you know, quite honestly, I don't think that is a winning argument of states getting into the IRA business and offering anything that, you know, employers and employees are going to, you know, latch onto. Just really my two cents. One thing that I could get behind the Department of Labor is, looks like they're pushing out, is finally going to allow for e-disclosures, electronic disclosures of participant notices. You know, this is 2019, and somehow I think that the Department of Labor and the thinking dealing with electronic notices is stuck into the 1990s. The fact of the matter is that there are too many plan sponsors who think email disclosures are already the rules. So they don't bother, you know, handing out written notices as required by ERISA. And, you know, it's burdensome dealing with former participants or dealing with a plan sponsor with multiple locations and thousands of employees. You know, we're in a electronic world these days. You know, everything that we do, so much of what we do is based on PDFs and based on the internet and everything except paper. You know, we by going to paperless, we save trees. We save money, and the hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars that will be saved annually if the Department of Labor issues e-disclosure guidance that alleviates most of the requirements of dealing with paper, mail, handouts, you know, of notices written on paper. And again, that's something that I think that the Department of Labor really has not gone with the times, because the fact of the matter is that, you know, as long as we allow participants who are, you know, averse for some reason or another to electronic delivery, you know, we should have e-disclosures because it will save money, it will save time, it will save the headache for plan sponsors and plan providers. And, you know, so much of the problems that, you know, we have dealing with timing of notices can be rectified if we have a system in place that will allow for easy dissemination of electronic disclosures while maintaining a safety valve for those participants who, for some reason or another, want mailed or, you know, handed out written notices dealing with participant statements, dealing with the SPD, dealing with any type of required notice by ERISA. And again, we should get a rule pretty soon about that, and I'm very, very excited about it because you will see dramatic savings nationally in terms of, you know, paper. I think that something like $500 million in annual savings. Obviously, the paper and tree lobby, you know, they may not like it, but it's a win-win for participants, plan sponsors, and plan providers as we go more and more to a paper-free society, which is, you know, something that's not only good for the environment, but obviously good for the pocketbook. Hopefully, you know, by eliminating so many of the mailing requirements, that will allow plan providers to maybe reduce the fees to the plan sponsors and plan participants. So I think that there's really room to save. And of course, this summer, more and more, obviously, litigation. You know, when you have large plans who make decisions that catch the eyes of hungry ERISA litigators, these type of class action lawsuits are inevitable. You know, each case is different. Each pleading is different from each case. You know, some ERISA litigators are better than others in type in terms of allegations, in terms of legal theory. But one thing that really pops into my mind, I talked about on that 401ksite.com, is obviously the MIT situation where Abigail Johnson, the head of Fidelity, was on the board of directors for board of trustees for MIT. And then, of course, Fidelity being the record keeper for the plan. And, of course, you know, any hungry ERISA litigator will say, well, you know what, that means they breached fiduciary duty. You know, they did it because they kept Fidelity as the record keeper because, you know, listen, the head woman in charge of Fidelity sits on the board of trustees or whatever it is, and obviously something bad happened. And that really always goes back to, you know, something that I really believe. It's all about appearances sometimes, and appearances matter. They say, you know, never judge a book by its cover. Well, you know, that's nice. That's a nice feeling. But sometimes things look bad, and they may not be bad, but they look bad. You know, and I will always point out to the village that I live in, Oceanside. You have a we're an unincorporated hamlet or unincorporated village or whatever it is, and we have a board of education who, for some reason or another, doesn't think it's wrong to hire their children as, you know, as employees of the school district. So you got one guy, you know, he's got three sons. Two of the three now work for the school district. One is a janitor and one working in the library and at high school. And it was pretty funny because I went to the high school visiting with my son with orientation. And I see a guy, you know, in the library just eating lunch, looking like, you know, like we're bothering him or whatnot. And I would assume that that's one of the Board of Education's member sons. And people say, oh, there's nothing wrong with it. They abstain from the voting. But, of course, you know, school board members are chumming with each other and whatnot. And, you know, that doesn't really mean anything when school board 99% of the time, you know, votes for something 5-0. And it doesn't look right. And, you know, I think that that's really important as a plan sponsor, as a plan provider. Avoid situations that look bad or implies impropriety. So when MIT has Fidelity as their record keeper and Abigail Johnson's on the Board of Trustees, I'm not suggesting that, you know, Abigail Johnson is on the Board of Trustees because Fidelity is the record keeper or Fidelity is the record keeper because Abigail Johnson's on the Board of Trustees. But anything that looks improper, people are going to assume the worst. We always assume the worst in people. And most of the time, we're right. But a lot of times when it comes to ERISA, there isn't money changing hands. There isn't anything improper, but it looks bad. And of course, you know, it's the, you know, the participant's duty in a case to prove the prima facie case that the plan sponsor violated or breached a fiduciary duty by making a such and such transaction or making a fiduciary decision. It's their prima facie case. And sometimes they make an allegation, they can't prove it, and the case gets thrown out. But, you know, obviously, you know, MIT may win the case or whatever it may be or whatever case it is. You know, you can get sued and win, but at the end of the day, it costs you a lot of money, and a lot of time, and a lot of heartache to mount a defense to any type of litigation. And, you know, the best way to avoid litigation sometimes is to, you know, look at the transactions you're making from a different perspective, not your own. What does it look like from the outside? And I assure you that if the officials at MIT looked at it, they probably would have been more careful in their selection of their record keepers or just documenting the process to make sure that the selection of Fidelity as the record keeper wasn't done because, you know, of who Abigail Johnson is, both to Fidelity and to MIT. But the fact of the matter is that if you're, you know, laissez-faire about things and not really caring, just like my friends on the Oceanside School Board, it's still, you know, it may warrant investigation. It may warrant litigation. So it's just not a really great idea. And, of course, obviously another topic that we've, you know, talked to ad nauseum with, you know, Dan and I is dealing with missing participants and dealing with, you know, the problems that, you know, we have in tracking down former participants. And the fact of the matter is that the Department of Labor is really going to try to address that. So I think that there's a big concern now with plan sponsors and plan providers to make sure that they have a process in place in dealing with missing participants, how to locate them, and obviously what's the procedure in place dealing with their account balances and, you know, the problems that are with it. So that's going to be it for that very, very special episode of that 401k podcast. Obviously, Dan's not here, so, you know, without a co-host, I'm not a big fan of hearing myself talk. And obviously, being right around Labor Day, the episode's going to be out here the Friday before Labor Day. We might as well, you know, conclude this summer with a very, very small episode and a very, very special episode. And we hope to see you, well, we hope you hear us a week from now when Dan Venturi joins me back for a very unspecial episode of that 401k podcast. So long. Take care.